another episode of the Social Media Church. I am your host, DJ Chuang, and this is a place for conversation with church leaders about social media. And today I'm joined with Vince Marat in Austin, Texas. Twitter handle at @M_Vince. And we're here to just check in, talk about social media and church. And he's been real active online for the past 2 or 3 years, I guess.
I would say, yeah. So, well, maybe 5 years now, since 2007 is really when I got into blogging and social media. So,
yeah, and then I think it accelerated when you took on a role as Internet Campus Pastor there at Gateway Church.
Yeah, yes, it did.
So how did you become an Internet Campus Pastor? Because it's not a degree that you can study for at seminary.
Yeah, my degree in studies were in just theology and youth ministry. So like a lot of pastors, I started off as a youth pastor. I mean, that was my intention, was to stay a youth pastor. But I ended up getting involved in church planting. So that's kind of part of the hat I wear at Gateway Church. They wanted a church planter. But in my church planting days, I planted a few churches in Southern California. And as you know, if you're a church planter, often you have to be a tent maker. I didn't really have a lot of professional experience prior to that, so there wasn't a whole lot of job opportunities. But I connected with some guys at the church I was planting. They gave me a job managing their web development shop. So I learned a ton. I wasn't there for my web development skills. I was there for my communication and writing skills and just learning how to create content online that moves people to take action for businesses. Mm-hmm. That's really what it's all about. Mm-hmm. So that's my background in web, and those two things came together, and Gateway Church said, we need a church planter who also understands the internet. And so it's just a perfect fit. So I've been here since May of 2009, just past 3 years. So been awesome. Incredible. Been incredible.
Congratulations. And did you do something special for your third anniversary?
Did I? No, I don't think so. Maybe I gave somebody a high five or something.
I was waiting for the live stream press conference or something.
Oh, no. It's pretty low-key. We're a pretty low-key town. I mean, we've been to Austin, so we don't. Not a lot of hype down here.
Well, let's take a little trip down memory lane. I saw a few blog posts that gave a snapshot of what you were transitioning from Southern Cal to Austin and becoming this Internet Campus Pastor. How long did it take you to prepare a launch for the Internet Campus, and what did you do?
I got into town, you know, May, June of 2009, started putting a team together, just started working on social media presence, of which Gateway had none. Mm. They had an old website built on an old .NET Nuke platform. So I found some volunteers who knew web. We overhauled the website. Within 6 months, I think, we had a new website. Mm-hmm. And that one was around for 6 months before we went to another one. We're on our third platform, fourth skin of our website, and we're really happy with how it's doing now. So within 6 months, new website. Social media presence, Facebook pages and Twitter especially, focusing on that. And then we launched in end of February, beginning of January, beginning of February 2010. So it was about 9 months of groundwork to go live. And we went live. I know a lot of churches kind of, they went sim live, but we went live. And that's really all we do on the Internet Campus Service part of what we do. All we do is go live. We experimented with some sim live. We just like live. It's just got a good feel. So that's when we went live. So about 9 months of groundwork to do what we did, you know, buying some gear, learning, getting some providers to give us some services, streaming and stuff like that. So
now what's the level of quality that you had to draw before you launched? Like, did you have to build a set? What kind of HD or whatever camera? Have on a campus that you consider a suitable online campus?
The Gateway video department was already starting to build a studio in a little kind of loft space we have in our auditorium building. It's not real big. It's probably 800 square feet. There's two editing bays in there and then a little studio space. So we put a light grid up in there, and we barely got that thing up and operational in January of 2010 when we went live. We already had some cameras. We didn't really have to buy any cameras. I just used what our video department had. The only piece of hardware we bought back then was the TriCaster, which I'm sure some people are familiar with. It was the cheapest way to get everything, to get a switcher, to get TidalLink, to get a DVR all in one. And then we just encoded straight into Limelight Networks via Flash Media encoder, which seemed to work pretty good. And so we did that for our first year, and then we jumped on with 316 Networks, who's using Kulabyte for their encoding, which is fabulous. Yeah. And I think we're streaming over Akamai over their CDN. So our quality is fantastic now. We've also, I don't know what the gear is now. Our tech director has totally overhauled our studio in the last 6 months. When we're streaming from the studio, we're fully HD now. Our auditorium isn't HD yet, but the studio is. So if we go live from the studio, our switch, our encoding, we can stream 720p right now, and it's pretty cool. So we stream multi-bit right now. We didn't do that when we started. We just did like a 500K stream. Now we're doing a 1 meg, an 800, a 300, a 150, and like a 1.5. Okay. We use the same encoder to stream to our multi-sites. So it's all one kit. It's pretty
fantastic.
Cool.
You've got your desktop handled with multi-bit. How about iPad? How about mobile?
Yes, we started streaming to iOS. Probably in about a year and a half in. So I think as soon as we went with 316, within a couple of weeks, we were streaming iOS. And we've been with 316 a little over a year now, maybe a year and a half. So at first, we had like a small 150. Now we have a separate feed. So if you're detected on an iPhone or an iPad, it'll give you a quality that works with that. And in the last month, one thing I've been excited about, instead of having to kick people to that just the video, it actually streams in line now on the page. So when you visit the page on your iPad, you can still join us in chat and still watch the feed. You can do it on iPhone. It's a little small, but that's been great, the inline, as iOS has started to catch up with live stream. So been cool.
So what does a person experience when they join one of your live streamed online worship experiences?
Our live experience, we kept it really clean. I notice when I look around other live streams, we actually use a little domain we put up. It's skipchurch.net. And we have a little random button on there. And if you click it, it loads different live internet campuses as you're watching. So on Sunday morning, we'll go to Skip Church and just click that and see what other people are doing. And there's actually a link hidden at the bottom if you ever want to add your church. Anybody listening, you want to add your church to Skip Church.
Good.
There's a little link at the bottom, and let us know. We'll just throw you in there. And it's kind of fun. And it's just we haven't really told anybody about it. It's been live for a while. Ours is really, we try to keep it as noise-free as possible. We have a chat. Right now we've been using JS Kit to do our chat. We've been using them almost since launch. And it's pretty white label. Depending on how we set up, you can log in with Facebook or Twitter. We can tell it to pull links. If people tweet a link to the feed, it'll pull it into the chat, which is cool. But we're looking for a new solution because they are shutting that down in October. So, but they're open sourcing some of that stuff, so our developers are going to go in there and see if we can continue to use that type of deal. We've tried Facebook chat in the past, which we really liked. It works really well. You can just embed their chat. The problem is the moderation really sucks because it's once you ban someone, that's it. I mean, they're gone. There's no moderation. Here with JS Kit, one thing I really like about it is you can moderate someone and they don't even realize it. They continue to chat and they're the only ones seeing their venom if they're being rude or whatever. Granted, we've never really had to moderate very many people, and if it is, it's been Christians who are just over the top in a space because we're a real outreach oriented church, and we've had some people. The only time we've ever had to moderate people, it's Christians. So JS Kit we really like. Our developers built a little thing that gives us a graphic below the video, and someone can log into a control panel and fire off different graphics or links into that space below the video anytime during the live experience, which is great. And then we're just using the Wibia bar at the bottom. We've been using that for about a year. we just tested it and we like it. It works. Especially for people who want to share on Facebook and share on Twitter, and they're not, you know, and when I tell you or people who probably listen to your podcast, hey, share this link, you're probably going to copy it and paste it into whatever social network, where a lot of people just don't know how to do that. They need a button to click that says like, and that's been great. The Wibia toolbar. So we built it with a lot of prepackaged stuff. The only stuff we developed was what we call that live box below the video. And then it also generates a URL for each experience, which is cool. Helps us with analytics, resets all the like buttons and all that stuff when we change URL.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about numbers. So after since you've launched in 2010, now we're in June, July of 2012, how has that number accelerated?
It's been good. We're right now we're probably about double. So we've doubled in the last – so we've been live now 2.5 years as of probably this week, about 2.5 years. And when we launched, 80 to 90% of our viewers were local. And now that number is closer to 40%. So the most all of our growth has been outside of Austin, which is really healthy. We're really, really excited about that. And then one thing we do differently is I've kind of explained the different platforms. And actually, you were there, DJ, as we kind of talked through those different buckets that internet campuses fall into. We're that network model in that we're not trying to create an all-serving church experience on the internet. Rather, it's just a content delivery to try and get it to groups of people, whether they're gathering in homes or some of our networks overseas gather in coffee shops, restaurants, and then we even have one in Branson, Missouri that is they full-on have gotten space donated and have essentially built what looks like a church plant in Branson, Missouri, right on the strip. And they're reaching a type of people that no churches in Branson are reaching. It is just fantastic. So that's kind of where our focus is. So we don't have online small groups. We started having one-on-one prayer when we launched. That turned into, I don't want to say a nightmare, but it was more headache than it was virtuous to what God was showing us we were supposed to be doing, which was this network model. Yeah. So we pulled that probably a year ago. So for the first year and a half, we ran live prayer. So you could click on there anonymously, pray with someone on our team, which was it was cool. But
yeah, for our new listeners, if you can review what those four buckets of how to do online church.
Yeah.
Coaching with.
Actually, I kind of think of it as three buckets. Okay. And you can kind of fall into several, but you're gonna focus on one. And that one that when you say internet campus, most people are familiar with is what I would call the church online model. And that's pretty much you do everything a church would do, you do it online. People even so much as going to a small group. My small group's online. Some of the churches will do baptism type stuff and communion. They'll do all that stuff online, Bible studies, all kinds of stuff. So that's the church online model. The other one would be, which our model is, and that's a network model. Northland Church in Florida is very similar to us. They're using internet campus to try and get people to gather in homes, neighborhoods, restaurants, community centers to do church together, kind of like do-it-yourself multi-site. Mm-hmm. And then that third model is the billboard model. It's a way to sample a church before you show up. And we get a lot of this in Austin. A lot of people will check us out, and we'll hear that. We'll see that in cards when they fill it out. I've been going to the internet campus for 6-8 weeks, and I finally showed up. Or we'll get people in the chat who are saying, yeah, I'm just kind of checking you guys out. It looks pretty cool. Or because Austin is looking to be one of the fastest growing cities in the country right now, almost every week, we're getting people go, I'm moving to Austin in 6 weeks or 3 months, and we're checking you out. And then it turns into, I can't wait to get there. We're going to be there. We're on our way. And then our team was actually helping intake people into the community of Austin. It's pretty neat. So that's kind of the billboard model, but we're focused on a network model.
Yeah. And so as a network model, kind of a church, how do you know you're successful? And how many networks do you support, or do you just put it out there and trust that the gospel will do its own thing?
That's the question. That's really the question.
Well, that's my question.
What I think I lean on, I got to look to Clay Shirky on this, and I'm kind of taking our team through some of his ideas from his older book, Here Comes Everybody. I don't know if you've read that, which I highly recommend it, especially anybody that is trying to lead people. In his TED Talk on that book from maybe 2004 or maybe 2007, I think, 2007, his first sentence in the TED Talk is, how do groups get anything done? And that's really the question that we're asking. How do groups in a system that is not a top-down system, it's an open system like an internet campus, how do they get anything done? So we're trying to empower people. One thing we noticed is it's very expensive and very slow to find a leader and then try and train them up to build a network out of their home or in their community. That is really slow and really expensive. So in this year, probably around January, is when we shifted from, we used to make a call every when we signed off the internet campus, every service, hey, if you want to be in a network or you want to lead one, there's some links, and they'd show up below the video and they could click on it. And we were finding that the people that were signing up to lead just, they weren't qualified or they didn't get it. Or it just wasn't, it was too much of a burden, because you were talking, the follow through, the people that actually converted and became a leader were so few, it was just too costly. So basically what we've done is said, hey, if you want to have a network, then do it, then launch one. And they give us some info, and we're just emailing these people every week and giving them some content to help them out, some encouragement. And then we're trying to push them towards the table, which I don't know if you're familiar with that app. Okay. Actually, the guy that developed our internet campus platform is the lead developer on the table. Yeah. So we've been tinkering with it for quite a while. And what we do is we send people there. And we say, if you want to have a network in your city or in your town, look there. And if it's not there, if someone hasn't created a group for where you live, create one. And then get to know some people. So this is that model that Clay Shirky's talking about, and that is, well, let's gather a bunch of people, and then the people will be able to figure out who the leadership is. This is really scary for church people, though, so church leaders. And as I talk to our leadership team here at Gateway Church, John Burke and everybody, that's a shocking thing for them, because it's, we're used to, let's find the leader first and then send them out, where I think the future of church, because it's free. If these networks fail, it didn't cost us anything. Mm-hmm. In a business model.
Fantastic.
So just letting them roll and providing them, you know, real time, just in time help when they need it, rather than trying to invest and create a leader that just
Amazing.
Wasn't working.
So. Amazing. Well, I'm taking notes here so that I can add links to the show notes of everything that you've mentioned. If you think of some other things, email them to me and we'll add it to the show notes for this podcast.
Yeah,
I heard something radical just this week. I was meeting with some of the leaders at Saddleback Church. You may have heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they went from 800 small groups to 3,000 in a matter of a week. And they made a strategic decision that you can choose one of two things. You can either choose growth or control. And they decided to go with growth. And so to enable and empower 3,000 small group leaders, they lowered the bar of qualification. Previously, the small group leader had to know Jesus and be baptized and be a member, and they let those three things go.
Yeah.
And they said, instead of calling it a small group leader, they said, we just need a host, someone that is going to open their home, provide some refreshment, and play the DVD.
Yeah.
And when they did that, so they are okay with non-Christians leading, or not leading, hosting a small group Bible study, allow the content, allow the Word of God being taught by someone who's anointed and gifted to do its own thing. And that's just mushroomed. It was crazy.
That is really the future. And I think the church is a little behind the times, and Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody, really says that in this open, this is why Egypt fell. This is why Syria is a disaster, because you're tightly controlled dictatorship, your megachurch, just can't thrive anymore, because the thing that you used to profit from, organizing people, no longer has value. People can organize themselves for free on Facebook way faster than you ever could with your small groups faster. So,
well, here's the irony. You're a part of a mega church. How do you deal with the finances and the question of sustainability?
Yeah, that is our first year we launched in 2010, we were just kind of piggybacking off of communications budget and things like that. We really didn't have our own system of budget for the Internet Campus. So for the fiscal year that started the next September, so September 2010 to August 2011, our first full fiscal year, we finished in the black as an Internet Campus. To qualify that, part of my salary on our books comes from a communications department. Only part of it comes from Internet Campus. So that was a big balance. But even this year, we are significantly in the black, and I owe most of that to Kimbia.com, K-I-M-B-I-A.com. We moved to them for giving because Fellowship One has the worst user interface I've ever seen for any website for giving, and we've doubled our giving by switching to Kimbia. Doubled our giving instantly.
Wow. Wow.
By switching to Kimbia.
Yeah. Wow. So that's quite an insight. And
yeah.
I hope our listeners will really take a closer look at user experience as a part of what generates
results. The problem we were having, and I'm sure a lot of Internet campuses deal with this, when it came time to give in the service and we'd flash our button up below the video, here's where you can give, it would kick you over to a new window and you have to log in. And all this stuff. It was the equivalent of asking someone who goes to the auditorium to go to service, would you just walk out in the lobby and then go give, and then come back? Nobody's going to do that. Kimbia, it happens in a frame. You never leave the page. Every click is right there. It's mobile friendly. So hopefully for our digital program in church this year, we'll add that to our digital program. So when people are sitting in an auditorium at Gateway, they can just give right there on their phone. So Kimbia is awesome. There's a couple other just like it. And it's been fantastic. So that's probably our best move in the last year.
Amazing. So, have you heard of Pay with Square?
Square?
Yes.
I'm very familiar with Square.
Well, there's two aspects to it now. There's the little dongle thing that you can plug into your iOS or Android and swipe a credit card. And then now they've got a app that kind of works like near field NFC, whatever that stands for, where if you have that app and I guess you – connect up through the cloud, and if you're in a location that talks to the Square app, that you can give through the app.
Cool. So it can know where you are. It sounds like a new iPhone is going to have NFC built in.
Yeah, but it's not relying on NFC. It's just relying on geolocation.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah. So I just downloaded that. The closest location that does pay with Square is like 10 or 15 miles away. So I'll have to schedule a time for me to get out there to experience it. But that has huge
impact. That's cool.
Yeah. So take a look at that.
That's incredible.
Square is already over $1 billion in transactions. So.
Yeah, they are taking off. PayPal is trying to catch up. Sounds like they're going to point of sale. I don't know if PayPal can catch up with Square.
No, if everybody has a mobile device and everybody has geolocation, I think the Pay with Square is a huge breakthrough.
Absolutely.
It's frictionless.
Yeah, and I think churches need to get on board with that in all aspects. Giving is hard, and to make it easy was a big step for us, huge. So we're having a great year financially right now as a campus. So.
Yeah. Now, are there things that you do for your online church attenders between Sundays?
Yeah, we don't have a lot of resources as far as our video department. It's pretty small, so we don't get to do as much as we want, but we do a few things. We go live from our studio on Wednesday mornings at 10. We're taking the summer off right now. It's just called Coffee Talk. Mm-hmm. We've been doing it for about a year and a half, and it's been awesome. I flip on the feed, and it's in our live page, and I have John, he's one of our staff guys, and then whoever else can show up, if it's one of our other teaching pastors or whomever, and we do about a half hour. We just kind of riff, talk stories, listen to people's questions, and then we kind of wrap it up by touching on what the topic either was the last Sunday or what's coming up this Sunday, kind of steer towards that. So we do that. We've started some other content using Facebook, doing a Bible study. So we're just kind of going through the Book of John right now. We're going to try some other stuff. And it's a really short video. It's 2 minutes. It doesn't resolve. It just kind of gets a conversation started, and the people start chatting in there. So I think the live coffee talk is cool. It has a good live feel, and it kind of is for our core. It's not really for Internet Campus people specifically, but most of the people are in Austin that check it out. They put their headphones on in their office, and they poke in there at 10 o'clock in the morning on Wednesdays. And it's a good community hang. And then we're starting to record that and upload that. But I think the future for us is short content, 2 to 5 minutes on demand, and conversation type starter stuff is where we're headed. So,
I mean, that sounds like something you could do using Google Plus Hangout on Air. What do you think of that?
Yes, when they announced on air, what, a month ago, it got us pretty excited, because we used to, for a couple times, after Coffee Talk was over, we said, hey, we're going to keep going. We're going to jump over to Google Plus and start a Hangout. We'd do that. We'd start a Hangout. So I think we're going to be looking into just going from the studio straight to Hangout in the future and start doing Coffee Talk that way. And it's great because it can upload it right to our YouTube channel. So we're going to try it here when we kick back up again in the fall. So
yeah, and other people can join in too from multiple locations.
Yes, yes.
That's huge. Cool. You wrote a book. You are also an author. The book title is Context and Voice on the First Version 1.0.
Yeah.
Tell us about that book and what that is. Where is that? That's going.
Originally, I wrote the book kind of as a training guide. Just for what we needed was we used to call it the Voice of Gateway, and it used to be just a white paper we had for our staff to understand even basics of vocabulary. And here's what we mean when we say this, and we use the term Christ follower, and we try not to have the blood of the Lamb happening in our worship service because it's a outreach oriented space, and it was just a little white paper on communication. And I needed to expand that for our team because, going back to what we were talking about earlier, we need to free people up to do this on their own, because we can't scale this if everybody has to go through me and my team to get anything done worldwide. So that was the original thinking. We need to write something more expanded on just the Voice of Gateway. And it got to a point, well, you know what? I'm just going to kind of white label this thing and not make it Gateway Church specific, and then put a book out there, sell for a couple bucks. And it was cool. I had some good feedback. It was a good first experience trying to write something that was more than a blog. And from what I learned from that, working on another book that's just more spiritual, more from my heart this year, and working with some people to help edit it and make it something more legit. So in the next year and a half, another book will be out. But Context and Voice, it's a good conversation. And I'm blogging on contextandvoice.com and trying to keep that conversation about just communication strategy and content design. And I've been really passionate about that. After I wrote the book, though, I read Clay Shirky's Cognitive Surplus. And I stopped recommending people read my book. And I said, well, read that. Because it was, if you haven't read it, it is as prophetic as he was with Here Comes Everybody. It's even more so with Cognitive Surplus. Bearing in mind, he wrote that book before the Arab Spring.
Yeah.
And if you keep that in mind, you see him almost calling out the Arab Spring in that book with what's happening. And then, so that book blew my mind. So I recommend that to everybody who's using the internet for ministry to read Cognitive Surplus, and especially, and also his other book, Here Comes Everybody. But yeah, that was the book. And so it's been cool. I'll be going, speaking at some conferences on the topic, just encouraging people to think outside the box with what church is. My team, when we first started out in those first 6 months, when we were asked to do church on the internet, we asked this question, well, how do we, and this is really the meat of what my mind has been all about the last 3 years, how do we recreate, what is the basic rawness elements of a church service, and what would we do to do that online? And we had a conversation. But the conversation really got down to, what are people hiring a Sunday morning experience to do? And so we broke it down to three things. And a lot of people get mad because, there's emotion in the heart because it's my Sunday, don't take it from me. But when you really boil it down and you're not being emotional about it, your Sunday morning service is about three things. It's about a community getting together, people getting together. It's a relational experience. That's one, relational experience. The second one is a spiritual experience. Most churches use worship music for spiritual experience. Some churches use art, more or less, depending on it, for spiritual experience. And then the third thing it is a content consumption experience. And so then we ask those questions, well, how do you compartmentalize those things? Better yet, what's the best way, full stop, to get a relational experience? What's the best way to get a spiritual experience? What's the best way to get a content consumption experience? And the answer for all of them is not go to church. It just isn't. The best relational experience is to sit at a table and have a meal. Hands down, that's the most important relational experience of humankind, to have a meal together. Spiritual experience, that one's tough because it's so different for so many different people. You know, your spirituality, some people's spirituality, the way into that and out of that is through their emotions. Some people it's more cognitive. Some people it's more aesthetic. So that's a real challenge, and we're working on some stuff to try and figure out, well, how do we create spiritual experience online? And right now, our main thrust there, we're doing an open source project. It's prayerlabyrinth.com. Yeah. If you're a developer or a graphic designer or video person, contact me and you can help us with that. We have a bunch of people all around the country, actually the world even now, starting to develop. And I think the first bits of code are already up on GitHub and they're working on it. So that'll be cool. For spiritual experience. And the last one, content consumption. That one's a no-brainer. People consume content through video. That's it. It's video, video, video. The average person on YouTube alone, just YouTube, not counting Hulu and Netflix and the other video services, consumes about 815 minutes of YouTube a month. And your best church attenders go twice a month. And so they're getting 120 minutes of your church, but they're getting 815 minutes of YouTube a month, not counting the part-time job most Americans have watching TV. The average American watches nearly 20 hours of TV. A screen with video on it is how people prefer to consume content. And the longest bits of content most people watch is a sitcom at 21 minutes. So most churches, their pastor preaches better than 35 minutes. So there's a lot to be learned there. And whenever I talk about this in conferences, I just get people get mad because they cherish the exercise of church more than what it actually is. And that is those three things I said. It's a relational experience. It's a content consumption experience. And it's a spiritual experience. And moving forward, a lot of those things are starting to change. So, I mean, look at the people that go to, show up to your church on Sunday, but they listen to three different churches' podcasts throughout the week and get other spiritual content from all over the web and reading books. We just got to get used to that. People are used to a buffet of spirituality, and I think we can cater to that better and help people grow more with spiritual content if we actually look at how people consume it. So,
wow, that's a fantastic insight there and a lot to think about and think through for various church contexts, because that's going to look different. Even as you identified, spirituality looks different for even a small group of people.
Absolutely.
That's what you have scale and so on.
And it's just the beginning. Right now there's around 2 billion people using the internet and various devices around the world. Yeah. By 2020, that's expected to be about 5 billion people connected on the internet. Most of that growth will be mobile. Most of that will be in third world. But you're looking at the users on the internet and potential mission field there, if you want to call it that, is going to more than double in the next 8 to 10 years. And it's just mind-boggling. The innovation we think we've seen in the last 5, 10 years, especially with social, could be blown out of the water in the next 18 months as people come online. So,
I think the activity for facilitating those three essential ingredients for a worship gathering can be done. The harder question is what kind of an economic or sustainability model needs to be built to support that, if at all?
Yeah, I think churches need to think in a different type of scale. You're familiar with Saddleback and the model they kind of started, and everybody has a different version of this. You know, Saddleback draws like a baseball diamond, and some people draw a target, and in the middle you have core is a word a lot of people use. And then at Gateway, we use core, and the next layer is committed. So your core is like hundreds. Those are your leaders. Even in a megachurch, it's not that many. You know, this is like your 1%. Then your committed is like the other 19% of your 20%. And then there's your community, the people that they show up to your church every once in a while. Maybe they show up to an event here or there. And then what we call the city. And as we target that, we're looking at around 100,000 people that Gateway Church would like to get some contact with throughout the year. That next layer that no one's talking about, I call it fans. And those are the people that just probably just consume a little bit of your content a little bit here and there. But churches aren't willing to let those people actually contribute to the institution of the church. Yeah. You've got to get into connected even before you're actually contributing, even at a monetary level. But online we're seeing people would rather – the better model is, well, let's get millions of people and only get them to contribute little tiny bits, even if it's – if we're talking donating or serving in church context or showing up to an event. How do you create a fan base that's bigger? One of the neatest things I've seen in the last month is the oatmeal.com. If you're familiar with what happened there in the last few weeks.
No, what happened there?
The oatmeal.com, careful with that link, it's not safe for work. It probably is safe for work, but if someone gets close to your monitor, a lot of curse language there. Matthew Inman's a brilliant cartoonist for our generation. The internet is his channel. And I think his site gets around 3 million uniques a month. And about a month or two ago, he was slapped with a lawsuit because he did a comic about a site that was stealing his content and monetizing it. They were stealing his images, hosting on their site, serving ads, making money. Yeah. And so rather than serving them in kind with a DMCA, which he had every right to do, he just did a comic, you know, made fun of them and all that kind of stuff. And so about a year after that, that website was, we're going to sue you and we want $20,000 for defamation, yeah. Which is ridiculous. So rather than going full legal channels, and it sounds like he had his lawyer write them a letter and all that stuff, he just did a funny comment, and it's a little off color. If you're easily offended, just don't go there. But again, he finds more of his content on the offending site, which was funnyjunk.com, I think, and so he said, rather than give them $20,000, I'm going to do a Kickstarter, raise $20,000, take a picture of the cash, and then donate the cash to the, I think, American Wildlife Federation and some cancer charity. So $10,000 each. They raised $20,000 on, I think they actually went Indiegogo. They raised $20,000 in 64 minutes.
Whoa.
And when the campaign ended, it was about $220,000. The media coverage was just blew up as much as media could online, and so he's going to have a pile of $220,000 cash. Send the picture to their lawyer, and what that showed me. Now you go, that's a lot of money, $220,000. But on a normal month, he's seeing 3 million people that are fans that he's never asked them to do anything until just now, and because of the added noise, I'm sure he got close to double his regular traffic. So when you look at 6 million people, $220,000 isn't that much. It was just something, oh, that's hilarious, here's $5. Where I think that's a different scale, and the church isn't used to that. How do you serve your fans? How is it okay that I can have thousands of people subscribe to my church podcast? Even maybe only a few hundred people go to my service because I'm a little church plant in a school, but there's nothing wrong with having this fan base out there who they don't contribute very much. And maybe once in a while, once a year, some person is excited about something they heard and they go to your website and they donate $5. But if you multiply that by a few hundred thousand, I think that's the future of monetizing this new type of church model. So.
Amazing. And it's not that far a stretch when you look a little more closely at the typical church finance, that even a church of 100, 20% is giving 90% of the revenues anyways.
Right. Well, when you look at that power law distribution, it's really closer to 5% is giving nearly 75% of most churches. Yep. So that's big givers. But if you can figure out how to tap into that wide, large-scale fan base, maybe the giving per person is something ludicrously low, like in a couple pennies, but multiply that times millions of people. Yeah. So that's the future model, I think, for sustainability.
That's fantastic. Make a comment about social media. Where is it headed outside of just these models? Because there are some leaders on the edge saying social media is just passe. There's no such thing as social media. Where's Google Plus headed? Where's Pinterest headed?
Pinterest is exciting, mostly because they've tapped into a market that barely liked the internet to begin with. Yeah. And there's something we haven't learned that. What did they do? Why is it that the couple of ladies in my office who are scared to death of the internet and just got on Facebook in the last year after they got on Pinterest, and they're gonzo for it? That's the story of Pinterest. Pinterest, I think their fans of their Facebook page is around 90% women. So there's an interesting dynamic there that we need to figure out, because they found a bunch of people to be interested in the internet that didn't like it before. So that's interesting. I don't know how they're going to monetize that thing. But I think social media as a thing is dying because it's becoming boring, and that's a good thing.
You heard it here first on Social Media Church.
Social media is dying because now it's just becoming the plumbing of our lives. It's not a thing to be on Facebook. It's beyond, you know, we're on the other side of the curve where just maybe the very laggards aren't on Facebook or Twitter or something to use social media or email or whatever it is, that people are getting connected. And it's becoming boring, and that's when we're going to see the really cool stuff happen, when it just becomes normal. I mean, you didn't see the women's movement get started in the 50s until the telephone became boring technology and everybody had one, which was – the telephone was the catalyst for the women's movement, because they were stuck at home, and that's how they communicated, organized. So now that social media is becoming boring – revolutions can happen, some neat stuff happen, like we saw last year in the Arab Spring. Churches, I think, can really take advantage of this. It just needs to become normal. I think we should stop getting excited. Oh, you should check us out on our Facebook page, and what's our Facebook strategy, and let it become more. And then the really cool people have forgotten about the technology. Now the good relational stuff can happen. I just signed up for another social network this week. Nextdoor.com. It's a social network for my neighbors and my neighbors only. You have to verify your address, and you get to have a social network for your neighborhood of less than 1,000 households. It's interesting. So we'll see how that goes. I have a really cool neighborhood dynamic on my street. I'm going to hang out 3 or 4 nights a week with my actual neighbors, if you can imagine that. I love them. We hang out, sit in the driveway, have beers. Can I say that on the podcast?
You're not Baptist. That's okay.
Okay. We have adult beverages. We just hang out. We barbecue in the front yard, and we just hang out. So Nextdoor, I'm interested to see how that goes. Nextdoor.com, yeah. Keep your eye on that, especially if you're a small groups pastor and you're trying to – in neighborhoods is a part of how you model your church thing. Nextdoor.com could be revolutionary. It could be a bust. We'll see. Google Plus, I love it because it's just sexy. it works real well, but people are really, really, really committed to Facebook, and because it's different, because it's something else to monitor, it's kind of a drag. I think until they open all the APIs, it's just going to kind of be in the dark, because I use TweetDeck, and I manage everything through TweetDeck. Mm-hmm. Until Google Plus can be in my TweetDeck, I really just use it for Hangouts, and that's probably it's only. And the Hangouts are awesome. Obviously, we're in one. The Hangouts are rad. So that's kind of what the social media horizon I'm seeing right now. Let's let it be boring. Let's stop trying to get people to follow us on Facebook as an institution, as a church, and just let it be normal. And I would also add, let's also forget about the people who aren't on social media. There comes a point where it's, you know what, we use Twitter on Sunday morning for a conversation, and we really don't have another channel for you to be a part of this other thing through a hashtag. We're just using, or we're using Facebook. Facebook's the login for our chat on our internet campus. We don't have anything else. I'm sorry. Let's, you know, it's too expensive to worry about other stuff. I think that's, you know, and smartphones. I'm sorry you don't have a smartphone, but we use that for this thing we're doing, you know, at our church. And I think that's okay. So, because right now I think smartphone penetration is surpassing 60% by the end of this year in America, and in a more ahead of the curve town like Austin, we're probably pushing 80. So.
Yeah, fantastic. So. Yeah, you are a prophet before your times, and I hope you are honored in your hometown there in Austin, the Silicon Valley of Texas. I hope there's some transferable skills that can really penetrate into the Bay Area, the Silicon Valley near San Francisco, where it's just really unreached, but yet very high tech.
Yeah. I think because it's so expensive. And churches are – is the church institution of the past was a really expensive operation. Yeah. But now that coordination and organization costs are free, I think churches really – we just have to figure out how to how do I say it? Fire the people that used to do what social media now does for us, free up some budget, and we could probably do some cool stuff. I think you're going to see some movements in places like Silicon Valley, like New York City, San Francisco, Vancouver, places where it was too expensive to plant a church. I think you're going to see that change in the next 10 years.
Again, prophetic words. Thank you so much. Yeah. Great chatting with you on the Social Media Church. We'll have to check in with you again. I mean, you've got too much going on that's just in your head that we need to get your voice out into the public air.
Thanks, man.
Thanks, Vince.
That was my conversation with Vince Marotte for Social Media Church. Again, check the show notes at socialmediachurch.net and add your comments and your thoughts about what church in the 21st century should look like. I decided to let this episode run long rather than chopping it up into two, and that's the flexibility we have as a podcast. We are not sharing airtime, and I don't need to entice people to come back for another episode. So I thought this would be most convenient to our listeners. If you enjoyed the conversation with Vince as you started listening to it, you can listen to it all the way through, and you don't have to wait for a part two. So I hope you like that. Again, add a comment to the blog post where this episode is, or call in on the listener night. Everything is at socialmediachurch.net, and you can connect with us on Twitter and Facebook at socmediachurch. Much easier to remember, socialmediachurch.net. This concludes an episode of the Social Media Church, a place for conversations with church leaders about social media. I'm DJ Chuang, and until next time, I'll stay connected with you online.